JG3. Number 5B.
All right, so I just want to read just a short little excerpts that I've put together just to kind of fluently read what I have just talked extemporaneously about hyperspace and just kind of a flow of how scientists define these terms, just so you have it in a more formal way here. So today they show with these hyperspace theories and their parallel universes and time warps and 10 dimensions. They say that it's a scientific revolution almost by definition, which defies common sense. They say the purpose of science is to peel back the layer of the appearance of objects, to reveal their underlying nature. The most entrenched common sense notion is that it is a three-dimensional universe. That is, length, width, breadth is all we need to describe an object within our visible universe. We are born with an innate sense of this. If we include time as another dimension, then four dimensions are all we need now to record events. From within the atom to the farthest reaches of the galactic cluster, we've only found evidence of the so far of this fourth dimensional space-time continuum. But they say now with the new mathematics there's this big break and that they begin to see other dimensions beyond just this fourth dimensional space-time continuum. And as I go on with the paper, and it says that public has its limitations in accepting such a theory. In fact, there's a lot of public scorn involved. To claim that other dimensions might exist or that our universe may coexist with others. That the progress of science is a scientific revolution created by the theory of hyperspace. And the different definitions for hyperspace that I could find was like hyperspace, the subject is so new, no universal the accepted term is used by theoretical physicists when referring to higher dimensional theories. Technically speaking, when physicists address the theory, they refer to a specific theory. For example, the Kaluza-Klein theory. That's what I mentioned. Kaluza, capital K-A-L-U-Z-A, that was a fellow, hyphen, Klein, another fellow, K-L-E-I-N, and together it's their theory. Of extra-dimensionality, and that is either called also super-gravity or super-string theory. Hyperspace is the term popularly used when referring to higher dimensions. Hyper is the correct scientific prefix for higher-dimensional geometric objects. And many scientists adhere to the popular custom and use the word hyperspace to refer to higher dimensions. You can see that anything new, there's always going to be disagreement within any community. So they're getting a hard time arriving at the exact terminology. Some of the scientists want to stay with it, calling it the Kaluza-Klein theory. That's the one that was presented to Einstein. That's the one that offered the fifth dimension of space to solve his grand unified field theory problem, or today, instead of Kaluza-Klein theory, it can be the super gravity theory or the super string theory, but a lot of them are just using hyperspace as the prefix to meaning space beyond just our normal realm of things and the higher dimensional geometric objects. The theory of hyperspace is that there are dimensions which exist beyond the commonly accepted four of space and time. A growing acknowledgement that the universe may actually exist in higher dimensional space, the hyperspace theory goes by the name of, again, just the same thing I had said, Kaluza-Klein theory and supergravity. But its most advanced formulation is called superstring theory, which predicts the precise number of dimensions, 10. The usual three dimensions of space, length, width, and breadth, the one time dimension, are now extended by six more spatial dimensions. The theory of hyperspace has not yet been experimentally confirmed, would be exceedingly difficult to prove in the laboratory. The theory's importance lies in its power to unify all known physical phenomena in an astonishingly simple framework. Quite interesting, isn't it? And as Chris mentioned to me at the break, I've also read two, but he, being in mathematics, knows that there are also mathematics that allow for n dimensions. That means, like Chris said, you can have any dimensions you want. It's not just limited to 10. But this is what the hyperstring supergravity, hyper theory, supergravity or superstring theory is allowing at the moment, is a 10-dimensional space. All right. So this is impacting, seeing that, you know, Mrs. Eddy talks about the lines, yeah, line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit. During her time, the fourth dimension of spirit meant many dimensions. They talked about the fourth dimension. It was in vogue during her time. They had people coming from the fourth dimension talking to the third dimension all the time. I mean, this was in vogue, and it was during the Victorian era. It just was taking England by wildfire or prairie fire or however you want to say it. But it was really hooked up a lot with spiritualism. So that's why Mrs. Eddy said that it was a line, plane, space, and fourth dimension of spirit. But her fourth dimension of spirit would allow, it's spirit, saying that there are other dimensions beyond our third dimension, but those dimensions that we're interested in are the realm of spirit, not matter, huh? Of idea, not matter. Now, there can be many dimensions in the fourth dimension of spirit within the realm of spirit, but she was qualifying the fact that it was spirit, not matter, because all the people at her time had the fourth dimension of spiritualism. Quite interesting. All right. So, anyhow, and that's why she has there in the matrix that it says at a point of mind and love that the fourth dimension goes on only in the realm of mind, idea. Well, this is fun. This is where, you know, you, and whenever you look into books of physics, one always sees the farmer, so to speak, with his little tree planted right there. He has the reductionist view where the world has been reduced down to nothing but the farm. And then he's blown it up and said, well, then that's all that goes on in the world is my farm. And somebody came along on a horse and said, no, there's something else in the world besides your farm. So he's poked his head out, and at the Newton's time, he saw the great machine world. that was better than just the farm, wasn't it? He looked out and could see the Newtonian clockwork universe and the laws of gravity in those days, explaining how the third dimension works according to his concepts of time in the third dimension. But we know Einstein changed the way we look at that universe with the anomaly time. He gave another view of what that farmer would look at when he poked his head out. But now we see today that we begin to look out into the universe. I'm not sure if you can dim the lights. Is it possible to dim the lights here, Michael? All right. Can you see that all right? All right. All right. So therefore, we can see that today that we are looking out from planet Earth of the third dimension into the Einsteinian worldview, and that first of all from the Newtonian view, and that was the three dimensions of space coordinated by time. But then they say that we can look out from Earth and see something beyond Einstein, and then that is into a fourth dimension of space, really into that hyperspace universe. And therefore, the objects of hyperspace, they say, and I'll show you, we can't see as a fourth dimensional space. Being in the third dimension, we do not know and cannot see the fourth dimension. They only can see the shadow of the fourth dimension. So this would be a symbol of a hypercube that is giving us just the shadow of the fourth dimension. Now, that is because the brain itself only can see in three dimensions. It the way the eyes are set up in this in its what is it called, parallax or something, way it looks, the way one eye looks here and another eye there, it forms just a third dimensional image, the brain, from a parallax view. So we know that the eye is just the receiving tube for all the various information that is coming into the brain from the electromagnetic spectrum. And the brain then takes together what the eye brings in from the electromagnetic spectrum, what the ear hears, what we touch and feel. All this information is coming in through the nerve ends to the brain, and therefore the brain then binds these images together, and that's a question on how it binds it together. I think it's still an open question how the sight coming in and the hearing coming in and the sense testimony coming in is all formed together to give image, but the image it sees is only in the third dimension. So we're limited to our brain. Our brain at the moment can't see anything except, as we know, a very narrow band, for example, color on the electromagnetic spectrum. So therefore, one can see that, well, if we're seeing only a very narrow band on the electromagnetic spectrum, just the wavelengths that occur here, there are other wavelengths. If we go out a little more, we would see ultraviolet light. If we went out a little bit more, we would see X-ray lights. If we included a little more, we would see with gamma ray vision. If we went a little bit more, we'd have cosmic ray vision. You see, or we could say if we could hear a little more, we would begin to pick up information that is out there and available to us that our senses just are not receptive to. So this, the scientists want us to know then that we are limited to our physical senses, and therefore that doesn't mean that these things don't exist. Just because we don't see them doesn't mean that they aren't there. And as I say, they have discovered it in mathematics, that it's there, that there are other dimensions. They're perplexed. They don't know how to get to them or reach them, you see. So, for example, this is Einstein. And it says here that in Flatland, a jail is a circle drawn around a person. To escape this circle is impossible in two dimensions. However, a three-dimensional person can yank a Flatlander out of jail into the third dimension. To a jailer, it appears as though the prisoner has mysteriously vanished into thin air. Wonderful, isn't it? Really cute. All right, we can understand that, all right. So what happens if a fourth-dimensional creature yanks us out? Wouldn't like that so well, would we? I'm being facetious, but it's just showing up. My main point is we want to see that the impact of dimensionality on the world today, and they are thinking in terms of other dimensions. So it shows here that one can go from a point to a line, to a square, to a cube, to a hypercube, meaning we can go from a point lander to a line lander to a square lander to a cube lander, of which we are, into a hypercube lander who lives in the fourth dimension of space, or can see in four-dimensional space or five-dimensional space or six or seven or eight-dimensional space or n-dimensional space. So this figure shows that a line forms when a point is extended in a particular direction. Shifting the line at right angles to its length generates a square. whereas moving the square at right angles to its plane produces a cube. Moving the cube at right angles to all three previously defined directions creates a hypercube. We haven't seen too many of these lately, have we? There's Einstein again. Let's see what he's doing. All right, it says, three, a flatlander can visualize a cube by examining its shadow, which appears as a square within a square. If the cube is rotated, the squares execute motions that appear impossible to a flatlander. So we can see that Einstein's holding his flashlight over a cube, and the flatlander sees a cube within a cube. If you rotate the shadow a bit, it motions seem impossible to the flatlander. Similarly, the shadow of a hypercube is a cube within a cube. If the hypercube is rotated in four dimensions, the cube executes motions that appear impossible to our third-dimensional brains. So they say here that a flatlander cannot visualize a cube, but they can conceptualize the three-dimensional cube by unraveling it. To a flatlander, a cube, when unfolded, resembles a cross consisting of six squares. So a flatlander cannot conceptualize a three-dimensional cube, but it can, it cannot see a three-dimensional cube, but it can conceptualize a three-dimensional cube by unraveling it. So a cube looks like an unraveled cross to a flatlander. Similarly, we cannot visualize a four-dimensional hypercube, but if we unfold it, we have a series of cubes arranged in a cross-like tesseract. Although the cube of a tesseract appears immobile, a four-dimensional person can wrap it up and wrap up the cube into hypercube. So we can see, therefore, that to a flatlander, the cube, he can only visualize a three-dimensional cube by unraveling it. This is what a cube looks like to a flatlander, and he can conceptualize it. But only somebody in the third dimension can fold it back up into a cube. So we can't visualize the fourth dimension, but we can understand the unraveling of a fourth-dimensional hypercube. So when we unravel a fourth-dimensional hypercube, it looks like this. That is the unraveling or unfolding of a hypercube. Only a fourth-dimensional being could fold this back up into a way a hypercube would look. And this is, therefore, we know Salvador Dali was always on the leading edge of work, and here is his work in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, where it's called the Christus Hypercubus, and it's Dali depicting Christ as being crucified on a tesseract or an unraveled hypercube. So we can see that artists, scientists have been trying to visualize what the fourth dimension looks like here. But they can only see it, first of all, either by unraveling it, or they see it in another way. Here it says that snapshots of the fourth dimension, it says like the shadow, two-dimensional shadow cast on a desk by a third-dimensional pencil. These computer graphics simulate the third-dimensional shadow of a fourth-dimensional form. So not only can we see we can understand the fourth dimension by its unraveled form, but we can also see the shadow of the fourth dimension. And here they say that they have a snapshot of what the fourth dimension looks like, but it's only its shadow. And this is a colored view of the shadow of the fourth dimension. And so one is kind of impressed by the colors. We see what are red, orange, yellow, blue, indigo, and violet. We're limited to these colors. But if taking on a higher standpoint, what even colors may look like as everyday natural phenomenon. We could encounter in these realms different types of colors or a more extended palette. Then, in talking also about this extra dimensionality, always goes along with the fact then that our universe may be one of an infinite number of parallel universes, each connected to the other by an infinite series of wormholes. Travel between these wormholes is possible, but extremely unlikely. So when they begin to talk in physics about these other dimensions of space, be it the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, or tenth, as the theoretical physicists of Stephen Hawking and these physicists, they're always talking about the possibility of wormholes. Hawkins, you know, is the one who in his books has talked a lot about a black hole, where they say that all of matter can be sucked up into a black hole that doesn't give out any light. But along with these black holes, they say there are next to them what they call perhaps a wormhole. And they, if you've heard, seen any of the Star Trek series of these Deep Space Nine, you hear them talk about wormholes or travel between dimensions. And so they have allowed now that there may be travel between dimensions through wormholes. And it says here that the Einstein-Rosen bridge connects two different universes. Einstein believed that any rocket that entered the bridge would be crushed, thereby making communication between these two universes impossible. However, more recent calculations shows that travel through the bridge might be very difficult, but perhaps possible. So they say, and this little bridge here is either called a tunnel or a bridge or a wormhole, and I saw recently in the newspaper before I came to the summer schools that Hawkins says now that he feels that it's very, very possible that wormholes exist. Now, when they talk about wormholes, they also now talk about time travel, and that they feel now with the way the physics are going, that if one enters a wormhole and the way the arrow, optimistic arrow of time and the pessimistic arrow of time and the way the arrow of time goes, that it can be reversed, it can go backwards in time, and it can go forwards in time. And therefore they're struggling, of course, with this concept, what if it's possible to go backward in time? And then they struggle with the fact, would this be good? Because we could go back and affect what happened in the past. You get that in that movie with that fellow, well, anyhow, you know the movie Backward in Time or whatever it's called, where they can go back and affect perhaps events, and that would change the present. Or their mathematics allows one to go forward. It's reversal, just like a tape a machine. You can either reverse it or go forward. It doesn't know any time. It will do either way, backward or forward. So these are things that they struggle with, and that they say that perhaps it is then possible to go from perhaps one dimension through these wormholes into another, or go backward, as I said, in time, or forward in time. These are all things that are happening within the concept of a multidimensional universe, universes or parallel universes or dimensions that exist beyond just what our eye sees. And certainly we can see in science the impact of our dimensional thinking, where Mrs. Eddy alludes to the facts where she says that Divine science, the word of God says to darkness upon the face of the deep, God is all in all, and the light of ever-present love illumines the universe. Hence the eternal wonder that infinite space is peopled with God's ideas, reflecting him in countless spiritual form. Those people don't mean human, they're just as considered as ideas. I'll leave it just there a minute, Gail. But she also talks about going on to spiritual spheres in exalted beings. One has to be open to possibilities. Here, I just want to show a few more images that they show of the shadows of the fourth dimension. Here is a view of hypersphere with its image sliced open to expose its inner structure. And then another view here in showing another unusual forms that we don't work with every day, forms that mathematics allow for and the computer can generate, but images that we don't see. So it's a question really of, they say, our categories. This is why you get physicists coming along. You can turn it on if you like. Physicists coming along, such as Sir Roger Penrose. He came to the University of Washington recently to give a lecture. And I happened to see all three lectures on television that he gave. And he ended it by saying that we were in a crisis of perception and that we needed somehow to get new categories to see the world differently.